It's business time, baby.
You are listening to Solo Monster Sounds Off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster.
Conquered. I'm home.
You're like fighting a woman?
You're saying Vince McMahon is stupid. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, my God. We're only an hour in.
Eric Bischoff is an idiot.
We have 2 more hours of this.
Maybe the single stupidest idiot that ever got into wrestling.
Who writes this stuff? Bruce?
Come over here and threaten me.
I'm the Solo Monster, damn it.
Happy Easter Sunday. It's Vince McMahon's favorite holiday. He gets to hide his golden egg from Linda. Make her hunt for it. This is episode 752 of the Solo Monster Sounds Off for April 17th, 2022. I am the Solo Monster. AEW aired its Battle of the Belts special last night. I've got thoughts on that. Tony Khan's reaction to that misfire at the end of this week's Dynamite. News on even more WWE name changes, and shockingly, the one name they didn't change. LA Knight appears at SmackDown on Friday night, but not in the role that I had envisioned for him, and why it may not be a complete and total loss. So we got that and a lot more to get into. I want to thank everybody who has supported the show so far this year. We are having a fantastic 2022 so far. That does not happen without you. If you would like to make a PayPal donation, you may do so at any time. On thesolomonster.com, you'll see the link, the text link right there at the top of the page. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout out. Before, though, we get into all of the PayPal stuff, I do want to give a shout out to Just Try Me Travis and Big Boy Trevor McCoy. Travis, who I'm sure is listening to this or will listen to this, I just found out what you went through over WrestleMania weekend. I had no idea. I thought it was a little odd that I didn't see you at the Hog Show, because I see you there every month. And now that I know why, I just hope you're doing okay. Trevor tells me you're doing great. I hope he's not kayfabing me. But I'm thinking about the both of you, and hope to see you guys at a show real soon once you're able to. So Travis, again, I'm thinking about you, and shout out to the McCoy brothers, two very big fans of the podcast for a very long time, two genuinely good people. Awesome. Anthony Anguiano, who is wishing everybody a happy Easter, same to you as well, Anthony. The Portland pop star Paul Hamilton, Night Stalker, Nayef Al-Safar, James Hollywood Herrera. Embracing the heel turn that I suggested a couple of weeks ago, Hollywood Herrera is here. Big B, Brian Becerra, Out of Control, Cody Thomas, Killshot, Keith Hart, the Chicago Slayer, Willie Eicher, the Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soep, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, New York Punk, Arnold Modesto, the Wichita Workhorse, Clayton Nettleton, Shin, Superkick, Akuma, Iowan Corn Farmer, Jesse Lampier, and Bertrand Shepherd. I met him at the Hog Show the other night. Tall boy. That's the name I'm giving you. Tall boy Shepherd. Taller than me, anyway. It was good to see him. The Vegemite Delight. Benjamin Cathery, who, in answer to my question from last week, said yes, Vegemite is an acquired taste. Again, I have not tasted it before, but I've heard things about it. I've heard very conflicting things about Vegemite. He says it is an acquired taste. He says the key, though, is to not put heaps of it on toast, because you need just the right amount of it. Knowing me, I'd smear so much of that shit on. I would probably, gag myself with it. So one of these days, I might have to give that a shot. But Benjamin, thank you. Also, happy 40th birthday to Edward. He has been listening for over a decade. And Chris from Bethlehem wants to thank his better half, Angelina, his perfect 10, for the 7 years of BS that she's had to put up with. He says, your honesty really means the world to me, and I love you and will die for you. So that says a lot right there, from Chris to Angelina. So the best to the both of them. I had a blast working the House of Glory show on Friday night with JD from New York and the good professor, Dr. Hillary P. Wisdom. On commentary, Sam Laterna joined us for the women's match as well. We had the Briscoes, Jay and Mark, after losing their Ring of Honor tag team titles and losing their GCW tag team titles last weekend. They were successful in defending their House of Glory tag team titles against the United Empire's Jeff Cobb and TJP. Charles Mason is the new crown jewel champion, which is like our world champion right now, since we currently have no world champion. He becomes champion by ending the reign of Low Key, thanks to the assist by Cobb and TJP, which was later revealed to all be a part of a sinister plot by one Will Ospreay, the leader of New Japan's United Empire, to screw Low Key out of his title. And Ospreay will be making his hog return next month, Friday night, May 27th, in our Holy Grail show to challenge Low Key one-on-one. The Amazing Red returned from injury, his first time back in the ring in 5 months, losing his six-way cruiserweight title to Casey Navarro, who is somebody to keep an eye on. Remember that name. Remember the name Casey Navarro, because you're going to be hearing a lot more about this kid. It's Diamante's brother. I know many of you are aware of who Diamante is. But Shad Gaspard, when he was still alive, once called Navarro the future. He saw something in him. And I can see why. Natalia Markova and Tasha Steele's Hog Women's Champion against Impact Knockouts Champion went to a double countout. I hated seeing that finish. Hopefully we can run that back at some point. A lot of great action elsewhere up and down the card. You can buy it on demand on Fight.tv. And our next show should be streaming live there again as well. If you've never checked out a show, give it a shot. It's a great mix of name talent with homegrown House of Glory talent. Some of whom I guarantee you'll be seeing on your television at some point in the not-too-distant future. I'm just glad my voice can be one of the ones that you hear as, you know, part of the soundtrack of their careers. So that is a very cool thing. WWE made it official this week for Labor Day weekend. It has been rumored now for months. They will be running a UK stadium show at Principality Stadium in Cardiff, Wales. Their first major UK stadium show in 30 years since SummerSlam at Wembley Stadium, all the way back in that magical, mythical year of 1992. They never ran another major pay-per-view there because of the time zone difference. You know, the show aired on a 48-hour delay here in the States, and they vowed not to do that again. And that was in an age without internet spoilers and social media, unless you count RSPW. As you guys well know, as I have schooled many of you on, many of you who were not aware, there was a little thing back then called RSPW. But yeah, that kind of stuff wasn't as ubiquitous as it is today. Now it's all over the place. It's on your computer, it's in your pocket, it's everywhere. Everyone's too connected these days. Word travels fast. But Triple H last year said the reason they never went back for another major show is because the first one, in his words, didn't make any money. Said, we didn't make any money. That's why we never went back. That's not completely true. They did sell a lot of tickets. They sold a ton of merch. I mean, they blew their previous record out of the water with that show. But, you know, he's talking about pay-per-view. Well, now on Peacock, they don't have to worry about that anymore since they've already made their money. They've got their guaranteed money. So it's less of an issue now than it would have been 20 years ago, or 10 years ago, or 5 years ago. But the date of the show will be Saturday, September 3rd. It will be taking place in the afternoon in U.S. time. So a little earlier than most of their pay-per-views usually start. AEW is holding its all-out pay-per-view that same weekend. I believe it's the next day. So there won't be any direct conflict. Alex McCarthy of Talk Sport was told by WWE that over 59,000 people pre-registered for tickets in the first 24 hours. They didn't buy tickets yet because they're not actually on sale, but they have pre-registered to do so. And that is a new company record for any event ever, including WrestleMania. That's how much pent-up demand there is for a major stadium show in that part of the world. These people have been waiting for something like this for years, and I can vouch for that because as long as I've been doing this podcast, and this is going to be 15 full years of me doing this show, I have gotten countless emails from people, primarily in the UK, whether it be in London, or whether it be in a city in Wales, or whether it be anywhere else, frankly, asking me, when is WWE going to bring another major show like a SummerSlam or a Royal Rumble or even a WrestleMania to the UK? I have been asked about this so many times over the years, so I believe that there is a lot of pent-up demand for this, absolutely. And now we can see that now. Now we have irrefutable evidence of this. They're going to sell a shitload of tickets to this show. And it will be airing as one of their, you know, what they're now calling premium live events. This is not meant to be like one of those old UK-only pay-per-views, Capital Carnage, or, you know, one of those shows. I was going to say, it's not like the Saudi Arabia shows either, but this, honestly, the Saudi Arabia shows, they're treated now like major pay-per-views. They just did the Elimination Chamber over there. They might be bringing TLC to Saudi Arabia later this year. So it'll at least be on that level. This will be a major show. Now, from what I've read, I have not been to Principality Stadium before, but from what I understand, the atmosphere in that stadium is incredible. So it should be fun. I mean, you think of some of the most rabid, loud wrestling crowds. I think of two places. I think of Canada, certain cities in Canada, and I think of the UK, whenever they go over there for a big show. So I think the atmosphere there is going to be fantastic. I would imagine the fact that it has a retractable roof in case of bad weather probably played a big role in their decision to run Cardiff as opposed to a bigger city like London. I don't believe Wembley Stadium, the new Wembley Stadium that they built where the old one used to be, I don't believe that Wembley has a fully retractable roof. I mean, somebody who is from that part of the world, who perhaps has been to the new Wembley Stadium, can chime in on this, but I don't believe they do. It's going to be a wild summer for WWE. They're running three stadium shows in a two-month span, and that doesn't even account for the possible Saudi Arabia show that's rumored for October. Yeah, they've got Money in the Bank in early July at Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas. SummerSlam, for the first time ever, is being held in July at the end of that same month at Nissan Stadium in Nashville, and then Principality Stadium in September. Now, I know that Drew McIntyre is Scottish. He's not Welsh. They're not exactly right next to each other, but that would seem to be the likely choice for the main event on that show. Drew McIntyre challenging Roman Reigns in the main event. Maybe they do it first at SummerSlam, run it back on that show maybe in September and do a title change. Yeah, look, it's possible that those titles that Roman holds right now aren't even unified anymore by the time we get to that show, which is something else to consider. But in terms of wondering what's the big main event going to be, that's one thing to keep in mind. The other thing, and I'll throw another name out there at you, and I don't know what his current status is. I don't know when his next fight, if he even has a fight scheduled, how that might, you know, kind of put the kibosh on these plans, but Tyson Fury has said that he wants to do more. He wants to do more in WWE, and he actually has, and both of them have said that they want to fight each other, wrestle each other. Drew McIntyre against Tyson Fury. They've teased the possibility of doing that match before. Whether it's against Drew or somebody else, that could be something else that they want to try to swing. Get a big celebrity name, a big celebrity athlete on that show. Maybe we see Tyson Fury back doing another match in WWE. He already did one before, so maybe they try to get him. Because, you know, it's a big stadium show like that. They're probably going to want to bring in a big name. I don't think they're going to have too much of an issue selling tickets, but I think they're going to probably want to have that big celebrity name doing something on that show, and Fury is somebody who I could absolutely see them wanting to bring in for this show. Dynamite on Wednesday was a stacked card on paper, maybe because Tony Khan wanted to give the fans in New Orleans a special show. They were supposed to run there 2 years ago, but then the pandemic happened and their rescheduled date in January got pushed back to April. So they finally made it there, and they were rewarded with a hot crowd that really only died for two segments, the Marina Shafir squash and the ending of the show, which was really underwhelming after Tony Khan had promoted there being an overrun for this week's show. That overrun turned out to be 3 minutes with their version of the Great Khali showing up and attacking Samoa Joe. Up to that point, it was a very good show. Some great wrestling and another hot angle with Wardlow trying to get at MJF. Samoa Joe beat Minoru Suzuki in the main event to win the Ring of Honor television title for the first time in his career. You know, Suzuki only just won the title a couple of weeks ago at the Supercard of Honor show, but he's, I have to assume, he's on his way back to Japan soon. So it makes sense that they would want to get the belt off of him. You know, it was a nice token for him being the first championship that he ever won on American soil. And it gave us something of a dream match that we've never seen before with Joe and Suzuki. Instead of letting fans enjoy the moment when it was over and Joe got his big win, Jay Lethal and Sanjay Dutt, they had promised a big surprise for Joe. And they weren't lying. The lights went out. And when they came back on, standing in the ring behind Joe was Satnam Singh, the first Indian-born player ever to be drafted by the NBA. He never did play in the NBA. He played in their summer league. But he was signed by AEW last September. He is a huge man. I mean, he's well over 7 feet tall. They debuted him the way that they did because they're trying to make inroads in the Indian market. This was also the week after the WarnerMedia merger with Discovery became official. And AEW is on television on Eurosport India, which is owned by Discovery. So Tony Khan wanted to do something that would get over big in that market. The problem is, when you do the lights out gimmick, it should be with somebody that people actually recognize. When the lights came back on, nobody knew who the hell this guy was, and nobody cared. He gave Joe a clothesline, then he applied the dreaded vice grip, like Great Khali used to do. There were better ways to introduce this man to television. They chose one of the worst. This was something straight out of what you would see on a WWE show, and not in a good way. You know, Singh is going to be the muscle for Jay Lethal and Sanjay Dutt. Fine. You know, I understand they may have business reasons for doing what they did, but as a viewer, this was a misfire. As an ending, it fell completely flat, and I wish they would have allowed the moment with Joe to breathe a little bit. His first Ring of Honor championship of any kind in how many years has it been? 15 years? Probably? Maybe more? It would have been nice to just show a replay, let the moment breathe, let him raise the title and celebrate, let the fans have their moment, because, yeah, they were cheering and they were happy to see him win, but it's just, I mean, and this, by the way, you know, this is another issue I have with AEW sometimes. You've heard me talk about how they don't allow things to breathe. There's always an interruption or it's on to the next one. And these are valid criticisms. I know the diehard AEW supporters don't take very kindly to criticism. You know, to them, AEW can do no wrong. But these mistakes can be avoided in the future by actually listening to these critiques. And to his credit, Tony Khan went on Busted Open Radio on Friday, and he admitted that he made a mistake with that ending, although he didn't accept all of the blame for it. Here's what he said. Credit to WrestlingNews.co for the transcription. I could have done it better. It's one of those things. I wish I had done it a little differently. The fans were always going to be right, so if the fans don't like something, sometimes there's some things about it where you're trying to get heat, and people aren't always going to love it. There were things about it I probably should have done differently now that I see it in hindsight. To be honest, it wasn't my idea to turn the lights out, but I am the ultimate filter. I'm the person who everything goes through. I put the outline of the show together, and when I came in on Wednesday, I thought it was the best outline I've ever put together. One of them, at least. As much strong wrestling as you could possibly fit into the program. I thought up until that point, the show was excellent, and that was the one thing we kind of went off on. People might not have liked it. Satnam is an important person for us. It was important to debut him in a meaningful way with Jay Lethal. He is going to be a force to be reckoned with. At the same time, turning the lights off for somebody people didn't recognize, it's a great point. The person who brought up turning the lights off has over 30 years of experience in pro wrestling. When they brought it up to me, I was only looking at the pros, and I should have thought about the cons, because that is my job. Well, his name is Khan. Because that is my job as the person who decides what goes in and filters out these ideas. We all had these people in the room, and somehow, not one person, when that idea came up, brought up the negatives. Then when we did it, all of a sudden, all of the negatives were very obvious. I didn't want it to loom over a lot of the great stuff on the show. I don't think it has or it will, because there was a lot of great wrestling on that show. So I am really excited about that, but the fans are always going to be right. I think it's one of those times where I appreciated what their feedback was. Now, as I am in my third year of doing this, I would not do that the way that we did it again. And these are the things you learn going into year three that I would do differently in year four or year five. It's nice to hear him recognize the fact that it didn't work. In the past, when AEW has tried something that failed miserably, they've pivoted away from it, as they did with Brandy's Nightmare Collective stuff, or after the horrible Dynamite finish where the Dark Order laid out all the members of the Elite. You know, they do recognize when something doesn't work, and they try not to do it again. Whoever that person is, though, with 30 years of wrestling experience that he referenced, he's got to make sure to throw that out there, that it was their idea to put the lights out. He only approved, for all the times that we have seen the lights out gimmick used on this show, I mean, that is a Tony Khan specialty. So I'm not even sure about that. They've done it so many times, you would almost like listen to him talking about it here and think that, well, it's never been done before, but sure, let's give it a shot. We see it every other week, the lights go out on this show. But I love it. I love how that wasn't my idea. I only approved it. Look, if you're going to take responsibility for something, then just take responsibility for it. It's a bad look to even mention that the idea came from somebody else. What is gained by doing that? You approved it. It's your show. You approved it. Just say, I fucked up, and it won't happen again. There's no need for him to passive-aggressively lay blame on somebody else for the idea. If you thought it was a bad idea, it became your idea the moment you gave it the green light. So that was awkward for him to even say any of that. On Twitter, he responded to a fan who proposed a different idea for how they could have handled Singh's debut by saying, I saw a bunch of fans say that after the fact, and I realized after that it would have worked better than what we actually did. Again, dozens of experienced people in our production meeting, and nobody pointed that out. And the idea came from fans. It goes to show how smart fans are. How do you think those people, those 30 people that were sitting in that production meeting with him feel when they hear stuff like that? Again, why even mention that? But now I see people attacking him for either, you know, for sucking up to the fans. So you really can't win. I mean, you're either a suck up who relies too much on what the fans think, or you don't listen to your audience enough. It's a no-win situation for the guy. But I do appreciate that he at least recognizes that this just didn't work. The way they used him last night on the Battle of the Belt show, this Satnam Singh guy, was actually more effective than what they did on Wednesday. But on that Wednesday show, we had another first-time-ever match. It wasn't just Joe against Suzuki. We got CM Punk against Penta Oscuro. That was another first-time-ever match. They opened the show with that. I thought it was a strong match. If CM Punk is going to be challenging for the world title in these next few months, he needs to rack up wins, and this was another big one for him. Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus, they retained their AEW tag team titles over Red Dragon. That surprised me. I thought they would pull the trigger on a title change there. They did not. Absolute Ricky Starks. I mentioned the show was in New Orleans. Ricky Starks is from New Orleans, so of course he got a hero's welcome coming out there for his match with Powerhouse Hobbs against Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland. And it was a much-needed win for Team Taz. Very happy to see them give Powerhouse Hobbs the win there. This Wednesday on Dynamite, Dustin Rhodes is going to check a match off his bucket list. He's going to go one-on-one with CM Punk. Wardlow wrestles The Butcher. Hook makes his in-ring Dynamite debut. Britt Baker returns to take on Danielle Camella in an Owen Hart Cup qualifier. Jungle Boy takes on Kyle O'Reilly in a men's Owen Hart Cup match. Darby Allin battles Andrade El Idolo in a coffin match. And stop me if you've heard this one before, but Tony Khan will have yet another huge announcement to make on Dynamite this week. What can Tony Khan's big announcement be? Well, let's run through the options here. I think there's a slim chance it could be talent-related. I doubt that's what it is. There's still plenty of free agents out there. I'm sure he's not done signing people, but I don't get the sense that this is going to be a talent announcement. It could be the announcement of trios titles, which is going to happen. It's just a matter of when, not if. More likely, it has to do with some sort of a business deal. It could be a new television deal for Ring of Honor or some kind of streaming deal. It could be the announcement of their first live event in the UK, coming off that big WWE announcement this week about their first stadium show, major event in so long. Maybe AEW will finally announce their first UK trip. There's a rumor going around on social media of, and I don't know where it started, but there's a rumor going around of a possible joint show, like a super show, with AEW and New Japan Pro Wrestling sometime in June. But I have not seen anything to substantiate this. Where some of this stuff comes from, I have no idea. See, I think Tony Khan has made an offer like Elon Musk did this week to buy Twitter so that he can purge it of all the bots and all the fake accounts that are saying mean things about AEW. I think that his independent study is completed. He's going to announce his findings and announce the fact that he has made a formal offer to buy Twitter. Because you know what? That makes as much sense as any of these other things. But Rampage on Friday night was a rare live show with a world title match, so naturally I was busy that night. They had the Blackpool Combat Club in trios action for the first time against the Gun Club, and they gave Wheeler Yuta the win for his team. So they're all in. They're all in on this kid. Ruby Soho reappeared. She lives. She reappeared to win her qualifying match for the Owen Hart Cup. And Hangman Adam Page bested Adam Cole in a Texas death match to retain his AEW World Championship. Yes, Adam picks up the win. They made use of the deathmatch stipulation with the tables and the chairs. Some barbed wire was thrown in. I don't know. I mean, you know, as fresh as this whole Warner Media Discovery merger is, maybe lay off the barbed wire. It's just a suggestion. But they had all these things thrown in there. Page wrapped the barbed wire around Cole's head, gave him a dead eye off the apron through a table. Cole was not able to respond to the 10 count. Yeah, there was blood mainly from Cole, but not an absurd amount like last week with Yuta, who was just fucking bleeding buckets all over the place. The thing is, you know, we just had and I mentioned this the other night, we just had a Texas death match 2 months ago with Hangman and Lance Archer, and that was more violent and more bloody than this one was. So if you're going to rerun the same stipulation and make it less violent, I don't see the sense in doing the same stipulation. Not that it was a bad match. I mean, they went out there and had a very good match, but, you know, again, Texas death match, people just saw one with this guy defending his championship and how bloody it was and how brutal it was. And you come back with one that was, you know, it didn't even reach that same level. It's just very odd to me. I would not be doing that. We see these types of matches so often in AEW. They're losing a lot of their luster, which is the other drawback when you consistently do matches like this with more or less the same stipulation and the same weapons and the same objects being used and blood and all that stuff. It just, you know, this is not fucking GCW. You do too much of this and it's not going to have the same appeal. I also think the champion should always feel like the biggest deal on your show. And my one critique about Paige's reign so far is that he really hasn't, especially if you watch Dynamite this week. I mean, they had a video package, not that they didn't mention it, but this match felt almost like an afterthought on that show. Like, oh yeah, by the way, we have a big world title Texas death match on Rampage in 2 days. But that being said, you know, Hangman has had an excellent run of matches as champion since he beat Kenny Omega. You know, Carmelo Hayes on NXT likes to say, oh, Melo don't miss. Well, Hangman don't miss either. And all of a sudden, I want to see Hangman Page against Carmelo Hayes. But Hangman, I just think it needs to be said, even though I have issues with, you know, how he has been coming off as the champion, the matches and the work that he has put in so far have been, I think, have been fantastic. You know, Rampage was an enjoyable hour. It opened with a strong match, it filled in the middle with a decent women's match, and it ended with a very good main event. But my big takeaway from this show on Friday is that that show needs to be live every single week. We need more live Rampages. Less taped Rampages and more live Rampages. Battle of the Belts last night was not live, and we have a new TNT champion. His name is Sammy Guevara. And it looks like they might be doing the right thing and leaning into the negative reactions that he and Ty Conti have been getting together on TV. Because last week, they edited out the boos on Rampage. There were reports from the people who were in the building that they were getting booed heavily. On television, it was very obvious that they were, playing around with the editing. It was like a fucking WWE show. And they edited out a lot of the negative reaction on television. This week, we had another taped show that they could have edited if they wanted to, and they kept the boos in. Dan Lambert, during the match, called Paige VanZant down to the ring. She ended up brawling with Ty Conti on the floor. Meanwhile, back in the ring, Scorpio Sky, he thumbs Sammy in the eye. And when Scorpio was distracted by the commotion outside, Sammy paid him back with a low blow. And then he hit the GTH for the win. Was it simply a case of the babyface going dirty in response to the eye poke? Or is it a sign of a heel turn? It needs to be option B. It should be option B. I mean, right down to the way that he and Ty were just sucking each other's faces after the match. These two are completely obnoxious together on camera. They just are. That's how they come off. Completely obnoxious. Ty has the feud with VanZant, though, so we'll see, you know, how they're going to handle that. The TNT title, it sucks because the TNT title has greatly suffered since Miro lost it last year. Scorpio Sky had the most uneventful, undefeated streak that I have ever seen in my life. They talked about how this guy went unbeaten in singles matches for like over 400 days, and nobody cared. Just a complete failure of a title reign for Scorpio Sky. Jonathan Gresham and Dalton Castle made their TNT debuts against each other for Gresham's Ring of Honor World Championship on that show last night. Castle had the boys back with him. I see he's still wearing that back brace. It's a shame his back betrayed him right when he reached his peak. He won the Ring of Honor World title a few years ago, and you know he had it for several months, but I mean he had a debilitating back injury, and I'm not sure how his back is these days, but as soon as I saw the brace, it just reminded me of the back issues that have plagued him. And really, they stalled his career, and they stalled a lot of the momentum he had. He was one of those Ring of Honor stars on the rise. He had this great hot act at the time that I think could have ended up, you know, in a bigger promotion or a WWE. Honestly, I mean, the whole Dalton Castle character and the gimmick and the boys and all that would seem ripe for WWE. That just seems like the sort of thing that they would love. But I think that injury really stalled him out, you know, in a lot of ways. I like the match. No surprise to see Gresham retain. Gresham has signed an AEW contract, by the way. He signed an AEW deal to work for ROH, but I assume they could use him on any AEW shows they want, like they did here. Jay Lethal, Sanjay Dutt, Satnam Singh, they walked to the ring after the match. Singh came off better here than he did on Wednesday. He chokeslammed the boys on the floor. He took out Castle. He got into the ring, and holy shit, the sight of Satnam Singh standing next to Jonathan Gresham. Singh is 7'3". Gresham is 5'4". He looked like a fucking child next to this man. This is the Ring of Honor World Champion. He looked like a little kid. Lee Moriarty comes out. He gets taken out. Matt Sydal had come out with him, hobbling on his crutches. He gets taken out. Here comes Samoa Joe with his new Ring of Honor TV title and a lead pipe to clear the deck. I'll say this about Singh. He at least seems to move around a lot better than the Great Khali did. Or even Omos over on Raw. He got out of that ring real quick when Joe came down. But Gresham also suffered an injury in the match. He said he's not medically cleared to make the trip to the UK this weekend for some shots he had for Progress Wrestling. I wouldn't be surprised if it was on that gut wrench spot that Dalton Castle did with him at the beginning of their match. It looked like he dumped him on his head and his shoulder. Even Taz mentioned it on commentary. Gresham's had to pull out of a few shows this year. He was pulled from the GCW pay-per-view in January. He was going to defend the ROH title on that show. And he was pulled from the Battle of Los Angeles right after that. due to COVID issues. He pulled out of his match with Low Ki at the House of Glory show last month. So now, of course, he's got some kind of medical issue that he's dealing with, and he had to pull out of this weekend. But they closed the show last night with Thunder Rosa successfully defending her AEW women's title against Nyla Rose, who has become something of a gatekeeper, I guess, for the women's division. Started out good. Those last few minutes really fell off. Rosa wins, though. That's the most important thing. And now she can move on. She can move on to Serena Deeb. I know Deeb is continuing her feud with Hikaru Shida right now, but the match at Double or Nothing, I think, should be Thunder Rosa defending that title against Serena Deeb. So that was Battle of the Belts. Again, quick one-hour special, you know, easy to watch. I say special. I mean, realistically, these shows are not special at all. They just feel like a contractual obligation they have to get through for the network. So they throw a few title matches on there. I mean, neither of the two Battle of the Belt specials that we've already seen this year have included an AEW world title match, a men's world title match. They had an AEW world title match the night before. They didn't even save it for the show that's called Battle of the Belts. I mean, if you bought a ticket to the show because they taped it all the same night, then yes, you got to see an AEW world title match. But for the rest of us, I mean, it's just silly. Yeah, they had a show called Battle of the Belts, and they had Hangman Page defending his belt the night before. But anyway, I want to address a name that has been talked about a lot on social media over the last week. I cannot even believe this is a thing. I don't know where this started. Nothing has been reported about him anywhere. And that is Jon Moxley. It seems to me what's happening here, people are jumping to conclusions because his contract is up soon. So they're jumping to conclusions because we haven't heard anything new about him signing a new deal or extending his deal, that Jon Moxley could possibly be headed back to WWE. When he signed with AEW, I believe it was a 3-year deal, and that was back in 2019, which means his deal would be up in a few weeks, either the very end of April or, possibly early May. So if I remember, his WWE contract ended that year. I want to say it was like April 30th. I think it was the very end of April. And then obviously the month after that, Double or Nothing, Jon Moxley shows up. So when he put pen to paper on his AEW contract in terms of the specific date, that I don't know. But people are remembering that, they're looking at that, and I think they're making these wild conclusions about what it all means. If the Cody Rhodes situation has taught us anything, or just being a wrestling fan for any length of time, never say never. And there will be more AEW names that make the jump to WWE. Cody Rhodes will not be the last. I think that's pretty much a lock. Cody Rhodes will not be the last. And when I say names, I mean even fairly big names that will either jump to or jump back to WWE. There will be more over time, especially if they continue to treat Cody as well as they have so far. Moxley is not going to be one of those names. Not now. Not yet. Cody obsessed over WWE while he was in AEW, wouldn't stop talking about them and the throne and all the stuff that he did. It felt like he had unfinished business there. He couldn't let it go. Moxley, if you read his book, he was completely miserable working for that company. He couldn't wait to get out. And he wasn't shy about the reasons why. It wasn't about the money. He's genuinely happy in AEW, and not just in AEW. His current deal allows him the freedom to work New Japan. He just wrestled Will Ospreay last night and challenged Hiroshi Tanahashi to a match next month. It allows him the freedom to do his garbage matches in GCW. He's the GCW world champion right now. He loves working those types of matches. Bryan Danielson said one of the reasons he left WWE, he being Danielson, is because Vince McMahon wouldn't let him bleed. If Danielson wants to bleed, how do you think Jon Moxley feels? Who's bled more in their time in AEW? I know Moxley's been here longer, but, you know, I mean, just think of all of these things. You don't think he's not having a blast working with Danielson and William Regal right now doing the Blackpool Combat Club stuff? and having the freedom to work his own shots wherever he wants for these different promotions and these different indies? Jon Moxley is not going back to WWE this year. If you are giving this any kind of serious consideration, you need to get your head examined. Any day now, we will be reading about or hearing about Jon Moxley re-signing with AEW. Or so, whether it's 3 years or a year or some kind of special deal, whatever it is. Any week now, I expect there to be news about that. I don't even know why this is considered a story. One last note, and it concerns the hottest tag team in the business right now, FTR. Dax Harwood and Cash Wheeler, Ring of Honor tag team champions, AAA tag team champions, fresh off back-to-back match of the year contenders against the Briscoes and the Young Bucks. It's finally happening. It was confirmed late last night. The rumors were true. Their idol, the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be, Bret the Hitman Hart, will serve as FTR's manager for one night only, but it will not be in an AEW ring. I don't even think it'll be televised. It'll be for Big Time Wrestling on Friday night, June 10th, at the iconic Webster Town Hall in Webster, Massachusetts. Bret Hart leads FTR into battle against the team of Brian Pillman Jr. and Brock Anderson, with the enforcer Arn Anderson in their corner. That's a great get for Big Time Wrestling. I wish it were closer to where I live. But if you can get to that show, make sure you check it out, because it may end up being the only time you get to see it. Former WWE and WCW star Virgil announced on social media this week that he is suffering from the early stages of dementia, and that he recently suffered what he says his doctors told him were two massive strokes. He said, "Without me knowing, over the past few months, the doctor had identified that I suffered two massive strokes. I didn't even have a clue until I started not working with one of my arms. It's basically not able to do anything. This was decent news. The worst news is that I have been told I am fighting with an early stage of dementia. The years of taking the big main event bump every night that nobody else wanted to take had started to affect me. I'm nervous, I'm scared, and God knows I can't afford to get through this and even make a living. It's really sad, as all I want to do is have fun and do what I always do, survive." So that's terrible news. Best wishes go out to Virgil. That's tough to hear. He's got an app for iOS and Android that you can download if you want to support him called Meat Sauce Madness. This is a real thing. Meat Sauce Madness the game. Says, "Control wrestling legend Soul Train Jones as he dashes forward to collect the dollars, breadsticks, and meat sauce he so rightfully deserves. Pull off stylish jumps, midair spins, and defeat enemies propelling wall to wall while you gather meatballs." That sounds like an episode of Sound of Gamer just waiting to happen. And we've got ourselves a trio of said tweet winners this week. You know, Mark Madden is now a two-time winner of the award so far this year. First, he got into a pissing contest with Ric Flair, who killed their 35-year friendship dead, which is really too bad because it appears that Flair may have been the only friend Madden even had left. Anna Jay posted on Twitter that she and Jungle Boy went out to eat after Dynamite on Wednesday night, and someone secretly paid for their meal. She said, "Whoever that person is, that was really sweet, and they appreciate it." And she included a photo of the note that this person left for them, which said, "Enjoyed the show. Hope you all enjoyed your meal. Wanted to bless you. AEW rocks. Signed, a fan." Which was a very nice thing for someone to do. You know, one of those random acts of kindness that you don't expect, but it's a nice gesture on that person's part. Well, Mark Madden didn't seem to think so. And he didn't waste an opportunity to once again shit on wrestling fans by calling them marks, which is apparently his favorite thing to do. Remember, he said the sole reason that he took the job as Ric Flair's podcast co-host in the first place was to piss off the marks. It will never not be amusing to me that somebody named Mark loves to throw that word around so much. But he quote tweeted Anna's photo to offer up this bit of riveting insight. He said, some mark that's probably half broke bought a meal for two wrestlers, each making six figures. That defines mark. Imagine living your life and being this much of a miserable prick every single day that you wake up in the morning. But it's also possible, again, he has no friends after Flair hung him out to dry. So I almost feel sorry for the guy. Almost. But not really. Then there's Braun Strowman. I missed this last week, but it deserves a belated mention. I could not mention this. Braun Strowman wins for how bad this man is at social media. First, he posted an Instagram comment under somebody's screenshot of Tony Khan's tweet about the bot army that we talked about last week. Yeah, the bot army, the fake accounts that are saying mean things about AEW. So Adam chimed in. I guess I should be using his government name since he doesn't use brawn anymore. He doesn't use brains either. But he said of Tony Khan, this is the same guy that pays the dirt sheets and says his wrestlers are free to do whatever but blackballed them from Control Your Narrative shows. Let me just say, that's not the correct usage of the term blackballed, but we'll excuse that. He blackballed them from CYN shows. Why? He says, because we're a fucking threat. I do love some comedy on a Sunday morning. You know, you wake up, you're tired from the day before. I've been working all weekend. I'm like, man, I'm going on 4.5 hours of sleep. But then I see a good joke or a good meme or a good sad tweet, and it just makes me laugh. It gets a pop out of me. It puts a smile on my face. I should be thanking him for this. Fucking threat. I love it. Yes, I'm sure Tony Khan is trembling in fear at the idea of Braun Strowman and Austin Aries coming for his head. Tony is too busy fighting with Skynet right now to worry about what CYN is doing. He may well be stopping his talent from working CYN shows. I would too, if I saw the turnout for their last one. But that wasn't even the weirdest thing that he said. And now, you know, he's trying to pass it all off as, he was saying dumb things on purpose just to get people talking about his company. Which, by the way, is a bad look for your company when the only way to get people talking about it is to go on Twitter and start acting like you don't know what the fuck you're talking about and saying stupid shit. You've already reached the levels of desperation that aren't very good if this is how you have to promote your company. But be that as it may, it's a weird flex, but be that as it may, this was priceless. So a fan asked Strowman for his views on the transgender community. And I cannot think of anything I care about less than Braun Strowman's views about the transgender community. But I thought he actually gave a perfectly sensible answer. He said, same with every other community. Do what makes you happy as long as you aren't taking away someone else's happiness. I want everybody to just live their life how they want and be happy. Nothing wrong with that, right? Okay, that's actually coming from him especially. That's a perfectly sensible answer. Another Twitter user saw his response and replied with, CYN is so based. Thank you, Adam Scher. They paid him a compliment. So what does he do? He responds by telling the person, yeah, I based on your mom's back last night. He insulted the man for paying him a compliment. And when somebody else called him out for doing so, he called them a nobody and told them to shut up. As NYXZ Pokemon said, now you've decreased the number of CYN fans from 8 to 7. They can't afford to chase away what few fans they actually do have. That's just bad for business. So now they're down from 8 to 7. It also wins for sad tweet. All of this wins for sad tweet this week. But there is one last one, and this really is the very definition of sad. From Liv Morgan. Apparently, there are people making fake accounts online pretending to be her and scamming people out of huge amounts of money. She tweeted yesterday that a man sold his home and lost everything thinking that he was helping, she said, me, the real me, Liv Morgan. She says, "This has me so sick. Please know I would never reach out to ask any of you for a single penny. I'm so sad. Please stop." I need to know the details of this. I mean, you can't just leave us hanging like that. How does somebody sell their home thinking that they were helping Liv Morgan? How does that even happen? It doesn't even seem real. But she was pretty upset about it. That is the very definition of sad tweet. You know, we have all of these sad tweets. My God, you look at all of them, whether it's that last one or the Braun Strowman one or whatever's going on in that guy's head. My God, you know, this is a good week for the podcast to be sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. Because maybe one of the problems here, especially when I think of Braun Strowman, I think of Mark Madden and some of the meltdowns I've seen from some of these people on social media, maybe they're under a lot of stress. It's the only thing I can come up with. Maybe they're all stressed out. Well, stress kills. And even if it doesn't kill you, it could seriously kill your productivity by giving you headaches. It could give you stomach problems. It could even cause a lack of sleep, which is something that I can relate to. I stress out over the smallest of things every day, even when I know I shouldn't. And it can really ruin my day. Stress affects everyone in different ways, but it is a very real problem. But it's also one that can be treated. All you need to do is remember to take care of yourself. And this goes out to Mark and Braun and anybody else listening to this. Maybe all you need is to try some therapy. Sometimes just being able to talk to somebody can make a huge difference, and nobody has to know about it if you don't want them to. This can be just between you and your therapist. That's where BetterHelp comes in. It's customized online therapy that offers video, phone, even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anybody on camera if you don't want to. You don't even have to leave your home. I told you, I stress over everything. I would stress over just finding a parking spot outside the therapist's office. If you live in New York, you know the struggle I'm talking about. With BetterHelp, you can park yourself right on your couch if you want and start chatting with a licensed therapist. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy. Give it a try and see if online therapy can help lower your stress. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. And Solomonster Sounds Off listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/solomonster. That's BetterHelp.com/solomonster. Stop thinking about making positive changes in your life and start doing it. You can thank me later. BetterHelp.com/solomonster. They set up a bunch of matches for WrestleMania Backlash on Raw Monday night, in addition to the I Quit match that has already been announced between Charlotte Flair and Ronda Rousey. Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins will wrestle again. Sonya Deville is Bianca Belair's next challenger for the Raw Women's title as they kill some time until we get the inevitable rematch between Bianca and Becky Lynch. And at the end of the show, they teased but did not yet officially announce a match between RK-Bro and the Usos to unify the Raw and SmackDown tag team titles. Brock Lesnar is not going to be on this WrestleMania Backlash show because evidently he was never booked for WrestleMania Backlash, even though he was advertised for it. But he is not expected back until the Money in the Bank pay-per-view at the beginning of July. Cody Rhodes wrestled his first match on Raw in 6 years against The Miz, only after a Miz TV segment to open the show that saw Miz interrupt Cody and correct him when he said championship belt by telling him that it's a title, not a belt. A belt is what holds up your pants, which is something that Vince McMahon has said. And then later when Cody used the word wrestlers, Miz corrected him and said they're called superstars. Now, I know some people took this as them somehow insulting Cody and making him look bad. You do realize that this is all scripted out ahead of time, yes? Nothing that Cody has done or said so far is not, you know, anything other than what they planned out and mapped out, or in some cases, I guess, scripted out in the back. Cody just has a natural knack for delivering it in a way that makes it sound a little more genuine than it would be, let's say, if there was somebody less experienced who had to go out there and remember all this all this verbiage. Some people go out there and you can literally see the gears. Not literally, but you can see the gears going in their brain as they're trying to think of, okay, what am I supposed to say here? What's my line here? Cody has a knack for being able to go out there and speak to people in a genuine way, even if he is delivering stuff that is very clearly scripted in advance. He is not being given some kind of special treatment here. But, you know, they had Miz correcting him a couple of different times, and people were like, oh, they're putting Cody in his place. You know, they're letting him know how it is here in WWE. This is all mapped out ahead of time. This is all part of the plan. I didn't see it as them trying to make Cody look bad. Just the opposite. I saw it as them showing how much of a yes man Miz is compared to Cody, to try to get more heat on Miz going into their match later in the show. You know, as far as the match goes, I don't know why there were people so upset about them putting Cody in the ring with the Miz. It's Cody's first match back on television. The man just came back. They want him to rack up wins. Who would you like for him to step into the ring with? He needs to be kept far away from Roman Reigns for the time being. He's getting Seth again at the next pay-per-view. We know that. People like AJ Styles and Edge, they're occupied right now. Those can be pay-per-view feuds for Cody later in the summer. Or later in the year. So, who, pray tell, should Cody Rhodes be wrestling right now and beating? Not just wrestling, but beating. If not for someone like The Miz, who nobody likes, it's easy heat, and it's someone for Cody to beat. It was fine. Cody won, and he accepted the challenge from Rollins afterwards for a rematch at Backlash, which Cody could very well lose. And if he does, no, that does not mean that Cody is buried. It does not mean the Cody push is over. It means that they're taking their time with the story arc and throwing roadblocks in his way before he gets to Roman Reigns, or whoever the champion is going to be when he eventually gets there. I support Cody being the one to dethrone Roman Reigns. If Cody Rhodes is the one to dethrone the Tribal Chief and win the championship, then I am all for that. But it is just as likely that by the time they get to that part of the story, the titles are already de-unified. And Cody challenges whoever the WWE champion is, and not Roman Reigns, because the story only works if it's the WWE title that he wins. That's the title that his father had taken away from him at Madison Square Garden, not the Universal title. The Universal title didn't exist. But I'm more confident now than I would have been a month ago, that they're going to stick with this long-term story with Cody after that promo he did the night after WrestleMania. It would be like having The Rock come out at the end of WrestleMania this year to confront Roman Reigns and tease next year's main event, but then swapping The Rock out for somebody else. You can't do that. Once you've planted your flag in the ground like that, you have committed to the story. They have committed to this story, this Cody Rhodes story, by putting it out there like that. I expect them to see it through to him getting his shot. Even if he loses, he still has to get the match. Although him losing would be a pretty shitty ending to that story. I also don't think you want Cody going undefeated until he gets the shot, because A, I think the story works better along the way he has to struggle a little bit. And B, you run the risk of the crowd turning against him. Now, I see these rumors of Brandi Rhodes possibly becoming an on-screen character in WWE. Putting Brandi with Cody on camera right now would be a terrible idea, if that is the idea. Maybe later on, but not now. He's got the crowd with him right now. He's honestly getting better reactions than I expected him to be getting. Now, it's only been a couple of weeks, but I thought he thought the same thing. He said the same thing in one of the interviews he did. I thought there might be some backlash. Oh, you know, he's an AEW guy, or he left us and now he came back, or let's shit on AEW. And there's basically been none of that in these first few weeks, which I think is kind of surprising. But I mean, whatever the reason, the crowds in AEW soured on Brandi and Cody as a combo on TV. I would not take the risk of putting them back together on TV right now. So hopefully that is just a rumor and nothing more. And on the subject of The Rock, I may as well mention this here. I did see the scene from the latest episode of Young Rock. I got so many messages about this. Yes, I saw the scene with Baby Roman, Baby Joe, and Rock, Young Rock, teasing a future WrestleMania match between the two of them. Does WWE want The Rock for next year's WrestleMania for a match with Roman Reigns? You bet your ass they do. They've been counting on that for a while now for that LA show. Is that the match they probably have penciled in for next year's main event? It would be if I were them. Yes. Any chance that you have of getting The Rock on your show, you would be a fool not to take it. The biggest star in the world. But none of this means that The Rock is locked in just because it is impossible to lock The Rock in. There is no Rock lock. It doesn't exist. The man has half a dozen different business ventures. He's making movies. He's a busy guy. He's also got... Remember last WrestleMania match he had? The full-time WrestleMania match. I'm not talking about the 6 seconds with Eric Roman at WrestleMania 32. Okay, you go all the way back to WrestleMania 29 in New Jersey. That was the last real WrestleMania match, last real match that he had. He got seriously injured. He needed surgery after that. It's going to be 10 years since that match. He's a decade older now since that second match with John Cena. The Rock is far from a lock for next year's show. If he was locked in, guess what? We would have seen him. We would have seen him walk out at the end of WrestleMania 38 this year or on Raw the next night instead of going off the air the lame way that they did with Roman and the Bloodline coming out and saying, I'll have an announcement on SmackDown Friday. If they knew they had Rock, we would have seen Rock on either one of those nights. The fact that we didn't tells me that there ain't nothing locked in right now. Even if they had a verbal commitment or a handshake, nothing is set in stone when it comes to this guy. They're going to have to get an answer soon because it won't be long before they have to start putting together all the marketing materials for next year's WrestleMania, maybe another 6 months or so. They're going to have to figure out what they're doing here and whether or not they have some kind of a real commitment from him. If they can do it, no, it does not need to be for a championship. This does not mean that we are getting another year of Roman Reigns as the champion. There's Cody, there's Drew McIntyre, they have the UK Stadium show Labor Day weekend. Lots of time for Roman to drop those titles, at least one of them, before then. Rock against Roman does not need to be about championships. It does not need to be about The Rock trying to become the first man in however many years it'll be at that point to beat Roman Reigns. That does not have to be the story of that match. It's about family. It's about the Samoan dynasty. It's about who the alpha male is, who the top dog is. Past against present. Rock is not going to be the WWE champion again, any more than Stone Cold Steve Austin is going to be the WWE champion again. He doesn't need it. They already did that story. 10 years later, Rock wins the title. What would be the point of putting the belt back on him? He's not coming back for a run. He's not coming back to do multiple matches. You'll be lucky to get him for one. It doesn't need to be for a championship. I actually think it makes the match outcome less predictable if it isn't for a championship. For that very reason, nobody would expect Rock to stick around. What's he going to do? Win the title? And then give it up the next night? What a hell of a way to end the big Roman Reigns run as champion. After all this time, we'll have Rock beat him and then just surrender the title the next night. Stupid. Makes no sense. But now that Reigns and Lesnar has been done, Rock and Roman is the biggest possible match the WWE could put together for WrestleMania. So again, they'd be insane to not try to put it together. But just because they filmed a little kind of a wink and a nod for Young Rock, people I think in some cases are taking that to be some kind of confirmation that, oh my God, we're going to get Rock and Roman next year. It's confirmation of nothing. Nothing is confirmed. They had announced the match with Rey Mysterio and Veer. That never happened because apparently Rey was out with some kind of medical issue. So his son replaced him and got annihilated. Veer's signature move is this cervical clutch submission. He put it on Dominic 3 times before they carted the kid off in an ambulance. They should send the ambulance directly to NXT because that is where he should be going forward. We got a 10-minute match between AJ Styles and Damian Priest that just ended without any decision, when Priest dropped to one knee like The Undertaker, the lights went out, and they shined a blue spotlight on him, and when the camera zoomed in on his face, his eyes made him look like something out of the movie Fright Night. Some kind of weird eye effect. It really is like a new brood, I guess, that they're going for. Or maybe the Lost Boys. But this sucked. 10 minutes and it ends like that, and they just move on to the next segment like nothing happened. That is inexcusable. I want to like this new Edge faction. I was in favor of the idea. I still am. I want them to add new members. Don't make me regret saying that. Tommaso Ciampa is officially full-time on the Monday Night Raw roster. Shockingly, they allowed him to keep his name. I mean, I guess it beats the hell out of Tommy Tortellini. He must have given them the rights because, per this week's Observer, all of the talent recently received a memo from Vince McMahon decreeing that from this point forward, I wonder if he was coming down with stone tablets in each hand from the side of the mountain. He decreed in this memo that from this point forward, thou shall not bring me any new talent using their real name or names that they used on the independent scene. I think we got that sense already, based on Gunther and Butch. There was a segment on this show where Austin Theory announced that from now on, he is to be known only as Theory, since he and Vince McMahon didn't think the name Austin really suited him anymore. Even he wasn't safe from this name change. Austin Theory is now just Theory. Stone Cold stunned the name right off the kid at WrestleMania. What a bump. That wasn't the last of the name changes for this week either. Unfortunately for these folks, they didn't have the same pull, I guess, that Cody Rhodes did. Raul Mendoza of Legado del Fantasma in NXT is now Cruz del Toro going forward. He was Cruz del Toro on TV on Tuesday without any explanation. Former NXT Women's Champion Kaylee Ray will now be going by the name Alba Fire, F-Y-R-E. And Casey Catanzaro will now be going by the name Katana Chance. Because you see, she was once on a television show called American Ninja Warrior. So now she is Katana Chance. Maybe she'll start dressing like Katana from Mortal Kombat, or she can wrap a blue mask around her eyes like Leonardo from the Ninja Turtles. I would say they could send her to the ring with a sword, but Drew McIntyre already owns that gimmick. Alba Fire. Oh my God. Oh my God. But back to Ciampa. He was being welcomed to Raw in the back by Kevin Patrick when Elias's younger brother Ezekiel showed up and welcomed him. And Kevin Owens then barged in and warned Ciampa that it was really Elias. And Ezekiel reminded him that he was actually Elias's younger brother. And he walked off. Ciampa seemed to believe him. Kevin Owens wondered if he was the only sane person left in this company. I'm starting to wonder the same thing when I hear about some of these name changes. Kevin Owens is making this work. Kevin Owens can make almost anything work. Him and Sami Zayn both. They're fantastic. Later in the show, Owens told Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville that he wanted to see Ezekiel's birth certificate or his library card for verification of his identity. He said he wants to give Ezekiel a lie detector test. And Sonya said, look, I'll agree to it as long as this is going to be the end of it. The last time we got a lie detector test was the segment with Vince McMahon and Mr. America. And it was so stupid that it was entertaining. I'm telling you, this is a very stupid storyline, but I think that segment could be the best thing on Raw this week. I'm actually looking forward to it, and that is entirely because of Kevin Owens. We did not get the advertised women's tag team title match with Rhea Ripley and Liv Morgan challenging Sasha Banks and Naomi because Ripley, we were told, was in protocol. They didn't specify if that was concussion protocol or COVID protocol. I assume COVID. Because they have announced now that the match will take place tomorrow night instead. And Rhea is back, so we do know the match will happen. So on this show, Naomi pinned Liv Morgan in a 2-minute match. We've got the explanation from MVP as to why he stabbed Bobby Lashley in the back and signed Omos as his newest client. And in doing so, they had MVP take some shots at Lio Rush and Lana without actually using their names. It was very clear who he was talking about. He said that before he joined Lashley, Bobby was letting some sawed-off runt and some wannabe TikTok star lead his career astray. Until he took over and he turned him into the almighty. It wasn't until then that Lashley finally became WWE champion. Now he found somebody bigger and better in Omos. Well, bigger, yes. Better. MVP's got the comedy chops, I see. So, we'll be getting another match soon between Lashley and Omos, and I'm sure it's just going to be a barn burner. I usually don't even bother talking about the 24/7 stuff you've noticed when I do my very quick recaps, my thoughts on Raw each week. I haven't talked about the 24/7 stuff in months because it's just too stupid. But they're about to pay this stuff off with not one, but two weddings on TV. R-Truth and some random dudes were celebrating with Reggie and Tozawa at their joint bachelor party. They showed them coming out of a room in the arena somewhere. What a fucking lame bachelor party. Let's have my bachelor party at work. We'll put some blue lights on the wall and we'll play some music. It'll look like a club. They all decided to crash the bachelorette party that was being held, I guess, in a different part of the arena, where Nikki Ash showed up in her superhero gear and claimed that she hired a couple of male strippers for Dana and Tamina, who are the brides-to-be. One of them turned out to be a referee, the strippers, and Nikki tried to steal a pin on Dana, but she kicked out, because she is the 24/7 champion. Tamina then dragged Nikki across the bar. R-Truth showed up and calmed everybody down and said that nobody could attack Dana and try to win her title until after she is married. And he is the one planning to marry both couples next week. I can't wait. I can't wait. They should have Elias show up in full beard to play the guitar at their weddings. That would drive Kevin Owens nuts. Sonya Deville announced that she had chosen Bianca Belair's next challenger for the Raw Women's title. She name-dropped Becky Lynch, Rhea Ripley, Alexa Bliss, Carmella, Liv Morgan, Doudrop, and Dana Brooke, all as potential opponents. If that's the division right there, the word yikes is the first word that comes to mind. If that isn't an indictment on the Raw Women's division right now, I don't know what is. When you look at some of the names on that list. Bianca said that she would be fine with any of them because she would still walk out with her Raw Women's title. And Sonya pointed at the stage as they waited for the person to walk out, and then she chop-blocked Bianca when she wasn't looking, and then she announced herself as the next challenger. That's as good a choice as any, I guess, until, you know, Becky is back for a rematch or Rhea turns heel. PW Insider had an update this week on which women are listed internally as the top babyfaces and top heels on the Raw brand. The top babyfaces are listed, I guess in order, as Bianca Belair, Alexa Bliss, who has made a grand total of one appearance on television in the last probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 months. If you don't count the vignettes, I'm talking actually in the arena, in a match. It's been quite some time. Outside of that one Elimination Chamber match that we have seen Alexa Bliss in the ring, you'd have to go all the way back to when she got beat by Charlotte. Which was probably, what was that, September, October of last year? And Charlotte ripped the stuffing out of the doll, and Alexa had her nervous breakdown. She's still listed as the number two babyface on that women's roster on the Raw brand. Rhea Ripley is number three, although I think that'll change soon. The top heels are Becky Lynch, Carmella, and Zelina Vega. Holy shit, that heel side is dreadful. Dreadful. So you can see why it is important to have Rhea Ripley turn heel. You can have Ripley go heel, and you can hope that Asuka is back soon, and then you can slot Asuka in either as the number two or number three babyface, along with Bianca and Alexa. But that heel side is awful. And then to close out the show, the Usos confronted Randy Orton and Matt Riddle, as Roman Reigns told them to do on SmackDown last week. Go to Raw, unify the tag team titles. Riddle wondered if they were trying to be like Thanos and get all the stones, and the Usos said, yeah, we got the blue ones, now we want the red ones. That's all these belts are anymore. They're just colors. The red team and the blue team. The Street Profits showed up. They didn't like that the Usos were trying to jump the line. They ended up fighting, and the Usos won. We had a face-off at the end with RK-Bro and the Usos each holding up their belts. Not only did the Street Profits lose the match, Randy Orton gave Montez Ford an RKO when it was over, just to make it very clear in this scenario who the losers are. And the Usos laid out Orton with a pair of super kicks. Since this show, it has been made official. At Backlash, it will be Randy Orton and Matt Riddle against the Usos in a winner-take-all championship unification match. We'll know just how serious they really are about these title unifications if they do it with the women's titles too. Because it makes no sense to only do it with the men's titles and not the women's. I don't expect them to, because this all feels very temporary to me. These titles will be ununified or deunified before long. But that's something to watch for. Do they do it with the women's titles also, or do they leave those alone? That will be an indicator of how serious they really are long term about keeping these titles unified. Tomorrow night, we have Finn Balor defending his United States Championship against Theory. They're going to try again to do Sasha and Naomi against Rhea and Liv for the women's tag team titles. The double wedding with Dana and Reggie and Tamina and Tozawa and Kevin Owens will give Ezekiel a lie detector test. Now, over on the SmackDown side, I just thought about this the other day. Remember when Xia Li was a thing on this show? Do you remember Xia Li? I know it's been so long. The Protector. Remember her? Remember those comic book vignettes that they aired, which were actually very well done? The comic book vignettes, she showed up. She had a little feud going on there for a few weeks with Natty. I guess they must have her protecting the back door at all of these arenas, because she hasn't been on television in months. I was just thinking about her the other day. But for months now, you've heard me say that LA Knight needs to be called up to Raw or SmackDown, ASAP, the week after WrestleMania. Get him on TV, start pushing this guy, because he is exactly the kind of person they could use right now, especially on the SmackDown side. The lack of depth that they have on these shows, they could use somebody like him. Well, he was at SmackDown this week. At SmackDown, not on SmackDown. The rumors were true. They are doing with him what they had pitched doing with Adam Cole. They auditioned him before the show as a manager. This was like a tryout for him in the role. We don't know how much wrestling he would actually be doing, but he was out there in the dark segment wearing a suit to introduce his first client as part of what he called Knight Model Management. His first client, Mace. No longer out for retribution, I guess. Mace was wearing a blazer, a pair of shades, some Air Jordans, and he wrestled Eric of the Viking Jobbers. He actually wore his street clothes the entire match. I watched the whole thing, this entire segment. Somebody uploaded it. Right off, I don't know if it's the Canadian feed, right off the satellite feed. It looked like it was right off television. It just had no commentary because the announcers weren't at ringside yet. So I watched Knight's entire promo and the entire match. Mace coming out to make his entrance. And once the match started, it was just the hard camera view. But I watched the match. You know, LA Knight has something that not everybody has. He has the gift of gab. He has charisma. He has charisma all day long, but he's got the gift of gab. The man can talk. The man looks and sounds like a star, which is something they desperately need more of right now. He's also older than the kind of people that they want to be bringing up to the main roster. He turns 40 later this year. Hasn't spent a single day on Raw or SmackDown. He's going to be 40 years old, which is a strike against him right off the bat. We have seen them use MVP in a wrestler-manager role, mostly manager, but wrestler-manager role with the Hurt Business and Bobby Lashley, and they made a great combo. Maybe they see Knight in the same kind of role where he'll be a manager, but he'll also wrestle. I always spoke pretty well of Mace, even during the whole Retribution deal. Of all the names those guys were given, I thought Mace was the least worst of the bunch. He had kind of a cool-looking mask. got size to him. You know, Brennan Williams is a name I mentioned even a few times when he was down at NXT. He worked a lot of the live events. He never got called up to the NXT roster, but you've heard me mention his name before. They gave him a shot on Raw, on the commentary team under the name Dio Madden. Quickly gave up on him. Last we saw of him there, Brock Lesnar gave him an F5 through the announce desk. If he wanted retribution on anybody, it should have been Brock. So there's definite potential in him. I'm not against the idea of giving him another chance because nobody benefited from the retribution stuff. Every single person. You want a measure of how successful or how much of a failure your creative team is, your angle is? There isn't a single person, not one, who benefited from the retribution stuff who was any better for it when it was over. Every single person came out of that worse off than they were before they went into it. Ali, Mia Yim, Mercedes Martinez was like, fuck this, I don't want to have any part of it. After the first day, she was out of there. Back down to NXT. I want no part of this. I mean, Dijakovic is dead in the water. His career is done. So, giving him another chance, another life, another shot at having a life here on the main roster, I don't hate that idea. If anybody can make this work, I think LA Knight could do it. If he's running something of a modeling agency, maybe he adds Los Lotharios to his stable, the Lethal Lovers, because on Friday, we saw the first crack in the armor between them, the first tease of a possible split between Angel and Humberto after Humberto lost to Madcap Moss. I'd break up with my partner too if he lost to somebody named Madcap wearing suspenders, even if he was my cousin. You have shamed the family name. You're dead to me. Raquel Gonzalez just debuted on the show. Now she's Raquel Rodriguez, but she just made her debut on SmackDown a couple of weeks ago. Maybe he recruits her as part of his new agency. This is all assuming this gimmick even makes television. Again, this was a one-time dark match tryout here. Maybe they do make television, but they decide to put the act on Raw and not on SmackDown. We don't know yet. My issue with this is that LA Knight was one of the top babyfaces on the NXT brand. I personally think he's better as the obnoxious heel. Evidently, they do too, if this is the role they're giving him. This is a heel role, heel manager role. But the guy was over in front of that audience. You need more top names on SmackDown right now. Not 6 months from now, not a year from now. You need names right now. And down the road, you'll get names like Bron Breakker who get called up. You'll get names like Carmelo Hayes and Grayson Waller who get called up. And those are the guys you hope that you can build around as the stars of the future. But until you get to that point, and until they're ready, and in a lot of cases they're not, you have a guy who already is. And he's not getting any younger. You have him waiting in the wings and you decide to bring him up as a manager? I think there's a better way to be using him right now. But if it gets him on TV, that's a first step. You know, when I joke about somebody like Xia Li, though, many times they call these NXT people up and they're quickly forgotten about or they give up on them. LA Knight isn't somebody to call up and then place on the back burner. This is somebody you can make money with right now if you really want to get behind him and give him a push. He can only do so much on his own. Vince McMahon has to want to get behind somebody like Mace in order for this to work. If they give up on him, they give up on Knight. And that's my other concern. Suddenly, his success or failure is dependent upon not himself. It's tied to somebody else. And if they give up on that person, that affects him too. It's like being in a tag team. Look what happened to Wes Lee. They fired Nash Carter. What's going to happen with Wes Lee now? Now he's in purgatory now until they figure out what they want to do with him. That's my issue with this. But if anybody can make this work, again, the guy has the charisma. He's got the ability to go out there. If this is what they give to him, and I think he can make it work. But I think if they only see him in that role, that is a huge mistake. I think he can be of greater value to them in the ring at a time when they need more stars. This guy can be a star. I didn't get to watch SmackDown Live. on Friday night or stream after, and having gone back now and watched it, I didn't miss much. The Usos showed up on Raw, so Orton and Riddle showed up to confront them in their home on SmackDown. Orton accepted their challenge to a winner-take-all match unification style, which was later made official for Backlash. Rhea Ripley was back from Protocol. She picked up a singles win over Naomi ahead of their tag team title match tomorrow night. They are now trying out Drew Gulak as an interviewer. To me, honestly, this felt less like an audition and more like a way to use him to get heat on Charlotte Flair before they ultimately release him. At least we made it through the April 15th date without the usual post-WrestleMania cuts that happen around this time. It could happen this week. It could happen next week. It could happen at any moment. We had two of them. We had two waves of releases in November alone. But it's usually around this time, the last 2-3 years, that if we're going to hear about any cuts, it's going to be around this time. We got past Friday. That's a good sign. But you've got to think there's concern right now behind the scenes in that locker room in WWE, both on the main roster and NXT, that they're not out of the woods yet. But if he is an announcer, beats the hell out of chasing around the 24/7 joke belt. I mean, let's not pretend like this is some sort of a travesty here. I dare you to name the last Drew Gulak match that you remember even seeing. He interviewed Madcap Moss in the back before his win over Humberto. Moss still has the stupid name and the stupid suspenders. They gotta get rid of those. Don't even phase them out. Just rip it like a band-aid. Just rip it off and be done with it. In the back after, Gulak interrupted a meeting that was taking place between Adam Pearce and Charlotte Flair. He's asking for an evaluation. How did I do, boss? My first interview, how did I do? This enraged Charlotte, who told Gulak he could try his hand interviewing her out in the ring. He pissed her off by pointing out that she tapped out to Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania, which she denied doing. She said she was actually adjusting her bra, which, if you've ever seen a Charlotte Flair match, it's not that far-fetched to think that's exactly what she was doing. In fact, my television had a heart attack and blacked out for 10 seconds during her match at WrestleMania because her breast fell out. So, I believe her. She mocked Gulak for quitting as a wrestler to become an announcer, and then she mocked the fans for being quitters at life. You quit the gym, you quit your job, you quit in your relationships. Hit a little too close to home there for a lot of people. Gulak went to walk away. She gave him a chop block, put him in the figure eight, and demanded that he say, "I quit," which he did over and over and over again. Eventually, she let him go. Gulak was the perfect punching bag for this woman. And like I said, I am not so sure this is meant to be a permanent move for him so much as it is a way to get use out of him before eventually cutting him. But at least here in this segment, he served his purpose. And we've seen them do this before. We've seen people make an appearance on television one day, and the next day they get cut. WWE congratulated itself. They filleted themselves on WrestleMania having better social media stats than the Super Bowl by having Pat McAfee react to Michael Cole and scream the word "stupendous" over and over and over again in the most obnoxious possible way, to the point that it made me angry, and I fast-forwarded through the next 8 minutes of the show. I didn't even go back to watch what I missed. This irritated the shit out of me. That much. And I like Pat. I like Pat McAfee. But this was so far over the top, I just fast-forwarded through 8 minutes of the show. From what I can gather, it looks like I missed a backstage segment with Walter and Marcel Bartel, and I missed another count-out win for Drew McIntyre over Sami Zayn, which is now going to lead to a lumberjack match between them on SmackDown this Friday. And I can tell you I had no great interest in going back to watch any of this. So we move on. Ricochet beat Jinder Mahal in a quick match, about 3 minutes, to retain the Intercontinental title. Looks like Ricochet may be using the Shooting Star Press as his finish going forward in place of the 630. I thought they might change the title, so I was happy that not only did they not do that, what surprised me the most was how quick he won this match. It wasn't a squash. Jinder got offense on him and had control at the beginning, but it was a quick, pretty decisive win for Ricochet. Ricochet is slotted as the number two babyface on the SmackDown side right now. It looks like they recognize that. And they're starting to treat him as such because they don't have anybody else ready for that spot right now. This all goes back to what I said before about LA Knight and how they could use somebody like him in the ring. on that SmackDown, Brent. Sheamus, Ridge Holland, and Butch were interviewed in the back. They lost Butch in the middle of this segment. Butch disappeared in mid-interview, and they couldn't find him. Like, he's a fucking dog who slipped off his leash. Oh my God, we lost Butch. Where did he go? Maybe he ran into traffic. When they showed highlights from last week after his loss to Xavier Woods, because Butch lost his first match and then he went nuts, and he smacked Sheamus and he smacked Ridge Holland. So they're showing this. And Pat McAfee referred to him as the Rabid Wolverine, or he referred to him as a Rabid Wolverine. And I could not believe my ears. I did a double take when I heard that. He does not say that without that being fed to him. So maybe Vince figured, we already own the trademark. May as well use it. But, wow. I was not expecting to hear that nickname uttered ever again on WWE television. We got the next chapter of the Lacey Evans story after that great vignette last week with her talking about some of the family trauma in her childhood, her upbringing. They continued to play off of that this week with her talking about how after fleeing from her father found her and her mother and continued to torment them. And she said Child Protective Services couldn't help her. She learned to find the positives in the worst situations, and it helped mold her into the woman that she is today. So now we know her backstory. I don't think we need to hear about her abusive father anymore unless she shot him or something. That would be interesting to find out. But now we wait and see. You know, what happens when they put her back in the ring and how the crowd reacts to her. And, you know, again, I said this last week, much better for her to be herself and be a genuine personality and not play this overly phony version of herself on TV. They closed the show with Matt Riddle beating Jimmy Uso. He vaulted Riddle into the air for a pop-up Samoan drop, but Riddle caught him on the way down with an RKO. Randy Orton could barely contain his excitement. He climbed into the ring after the RKO, losing his mind in the ring before the referee even counted the three. So this was a crowd-pleasing end to an otherwise fillerific edition of SmackDown. There was a noticeable lack of follow-up to the finish of last week's show with Roman Reigns and Shinsuke Nakamura. No Roman at all this week on the show. His absence was definitely noticeable. Now over on the NXT 2.0 side, with Nash Carter being fired and MSK being no more, NXT crowned new tag team champions this week in a five-team gauntlet match. No mention of why the titles were vacated, just the fact that they were. And Natalya became the latest member of the main roster to venture down to the PC, making her NXT return. I do miss the days when she and Tyson Kidd were on the show. Kidd was so good during that run. He was so good. In 2014. But she was back to confront Cora Jade. And it looks like she's going to be sticking around for a while, kind of the way Dolph Ziggler did. There was a great opener, with Cameron Grimes retaining his North American title over Solo Sikoa, who has proven to be one of the standouts on this show. Not surprising, given the kid's family tree. But I really enjoyed the match, and I thought the distraction by Trick Williams at the finish protected Sikoa from a totally clean loss. Even though Grimes did catch him with the cave-in and he pinned him, it wasn't totally clean. And then, of course, Carmelo Hayes comes out, attacks Grimes, and he wants his North American title back. Last week's cliffhanger with Rick Steiner being kidnapped by Joe Gacy and Harlan was just dropped this week. Bron Breakker mentioned that his father was back home safe and sound. But they had segments on the show showing Gacy off in the wilderness somewhere, having a bonfire, tossing Rick Steiner's Hall of Fame ring into the fire, which was not hot enough to melt the fucking ring. And by the end, he took a pair of tongs and he pulled the ring out of the fire. It wasn't like black and charred or melted or anything like that, because you're not going to melt it that way. I mean, it's not like when Kama melted the Undertaker's urn down into a necklace that he could wear around his neck. So he just pulled the ring out of the fire with the tongs, and he put the ring on his finger, and it was like burning his finger, and he was making funny faces. This was a very dumb way to follow up on that angle from last week. As much as I like the North American title match, I cannot say the same for the NXT Women's Championship match. It was noticeably rough in a few spots with Mandy Rose and Dakota Kai. It was mainly when Mandy had to take some of Dakota's offense is when things got a little wonky. Mandy retained the title with some helpful distractions from Gigi Dolan and JC Jane. After the match, Wendy Chu appeared on the apron and sprayed all three members of Toxic Attraction with Super Soakers. That I can't complain about. I'm not going to complain about that. Cora Jade. Cora Jade was in the ring for a promo. She said that WrestleMania week was the biggest week of her life. Her parents got to watch her wrestle live, and she came so close to becoming a champion, but she realizes that you don't always get what you want. She said ever since she was a kid, well, I mean, she still is a kid. Ever since she was a smaller kid, she wanted to be a champion in WWE. Then she rattled off some names that she grew up idolizing, like AJ Lee and Sasha Banks and Natalya and Paige, and I felt incredibly old listening to this. Suddenly, she was interrupted by Natalya. Like magic. She mentions Natalya's name, and then 10 seconds later, poof, she appears. I wish I had those kinds of powers myself back in the day, with Jennifer Love Hewitt, or Cindy Crawford, poof, and then she appears. I didn't have the same kind of luck. But she was interrupted by Natalya, who got the kind of reaction that she never gets on Raw or SmackDown. I mean, in NXT, it's a novelty to see someone from the main roster randomly show up, so the people went nuts for her, and welcome back, and you deserve it, and of course she cried. And she talked about remembering when Cora DM'd her, when Cora was just 10 years old. Cora was fangirling throughout the entire segment. She was marking out, bro. And Natty was being super nice to her before finally dropping the bomb. She said, Cora is the future of the women's division, and the future is bleak. She said the same thing backstage on SmackDown. There was a segment where she saw Raquel Gonzalez, and she made the comment to Shayna Baszler. She looked over and said, the future is bleak. And then she slapped Cora. She put her in the sharpshooter. Poor Cora Jade. Beaten and embarrassed by one of her heroes. I'm not opposed to someone like Cora working with a veteran. I think it would be good for her. I think Natalya also working with somebody like Nikita Lyons would be good for Lyons, who's got a lot of potential, and I think they also see her as being a big deal eventually. Nathan Fraser from NXT UK is the latest import being promoted to the NXT 2.0 brand, the former Ben Carter, who chose WWE after making some appearances for AEW. So we got a vignette with him talking about coming across the Atlantic to the United States and coming to NXT. They closed out the show with the gauntlet match for the vacant NXT tag team titles. The Creed brothers started out with Legado del Fantasma. Raul Mendoza's new name did not bring him any good luck because they lost, which sent the Creeds to battle against Discount APA, Brooks and Jensen. The Creeds won again. They moved on to face Grayson Waller and Sanga, who were originally supposed to challenge MSK for the titles on this show. Waller had his arm in a sling. He's had his arm in a sling ever since Stand and Deliver, but it was all a ruse. He yanked it off during the match to show that his arm was okay. The Creeds were able to pin the big man, Sanga, for the win, by which time the Creeds, they were running on fumes for the final match against the newest addition to the NXT tag team division from NXT UK. The men that have been stalking them for weeks, Pretty Deadly. The Creeds simply ran out of gas. 25 minutes into this thing, these guys are running out of gas. Pretty Deadly in their very first match on NXT win the NXT tag team titles. Some people may be upset by the finish. I thought it made sense. You know, they targeted the Creeds from the moment they came in. Now they're positioned as the ones who the Creeds are going to eventually have to beat to win those championships. This is all to build up the Creeds for a big babyface win. So I have no issue with it, although I do wish they treated Legado del Fantasma with a little more respect on these shows, because they're very good, and they treat them like jabrones. But I don't have an issue with Pretty Deadly winning the titles. There's still a lot on this show that just doesn't interest me. But the tag gauntlet was good, and the North American title match was very good. That was easily the best NXT match of the week. So let's take a few quick questions from you guys in the mailbag. You can always send questions in. I want you to send those questions in. TheSolemnMonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. James from the City of Industry. With the Steiner brothers going into this year's Hall of Fame class, do you feel WWE could still induct Scott all by himself in the future? They could, but they won't. I don't see that happening. Angelo from Toronto. If Vince and Tony Khan gave you the book for SummerSlam and All Out, what are the two biggest matches that you could put on for each show? Well, look, SummerSlam is in July this year. It would have to be Roman Reigns against Drew McIntyre. I mean, if you want to try to save the Cody thing for later, you could do Cody and Roman at SummerSlam, but I almost want to save that for later on. Then it's Roman against Drew McIntyre. And for All Out, just asking me personally, I would book a triple threat match. CM Punk, Bryan Danielson, and Samoa Joe. Just because. Doesn't even have to be for a title. Doesn't even have to be the main event of the show. Give me Punk, Danielson, and Joe. That is the match I would like to see. Daniel from Hamburg. I remember reading that Hulk Hogan wanted a rematch against Brock Lesnar at Survivor Series in 2002 where he would get his win back. Is that true? And if so, was this the only reason Hogan put him over on that SmackDown episode in August? Yes, I have talked about this story before, multiple times. Hogan did a clean job to a bear hug to Brock Lesnar on SmackDown. I think it was the week before SummerSlam. And Hogan was going away. I think he had an injury, a knee injury maybe. So he knew he was already going away for a few months. So he agreed to do the job on the way. Now, I don't know if there was an agreement in advance, like, okay, when I come back, I'm going to beat Brock. But he had it in his head that when he came back, he wanted to challenge Lesnar at Madison Square Garden and win the championship. And the idea of that is absolutely absurd. And thankfully, WWE felt the same way. And so they kind of had a little bit of a falling out there. Hogan ended up coming back a few months later and did the match with Vince at WrestleMania. Actually, he did the second match with Rock at No Way Out and then wrestled Vince at Mania. But yes. And again, think about how absurd that is. Even back then, Brock Lesnar, this guy was a fucking beast. And he's going to go in there and lose to the big boot and the leg drop? I think they made the right choice. Jad from London, England. What, in your opinion, is the greatest moment of Triple H's wrestling career? I don't think his comeback from the January 7th, 2002 episode of Raw was ever topped. So that takes it for me. It was in Madison Square Garden. It was one of the loudest, genuine crowd responses I've ever heard. And his entrance alone lasted longer than a lot of TV matches do today. What takes the number one spot for you? I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, when I think of just individual moments or big wins, you know, his first world title win was on television against Mankind. Not really all that memorable of a moment. His biggest WrestleMania win, WrestleMania title win, was probably against Jericho at X8. And I wasn't even a fan of that match. And that match was completely overshadowed by Hogan Rock on that show. You know, he had some other really good WrestleMania matches, but in terms of individual moments, it's got to be the comeback, I think, at MSG in 02. That monster reaction that he got. To the point also where, you know, you mentioned how it's longer than most TV matches are today. And it's on WWE television, that's true. But it was so long that his music looped. So after his music was done, it just started replaying over again. I think it's got to be that moment. I think it's got to be the Garden return in 02. Steve from Virginia, buy or sell on the better Kurt Angle against The Rock match, No Mercy 2000 or No Way Out 2001? Well, it's been a while since I've seen these matches, especially the No Mercy match, but I'm almost positive if I were to rewatch them again now, I remember the No Way Out match being better. I think the No Mercy match against Rock, where he won the belt for the first time, was good, but the No Way Out match in 01 was better. So I'd buy on that one. I would sell on No Mercy. So get those questions on in thesolemnmonster@gmail.com. And I will try to get to as many of them as I possibly can. And maybe, just maybe, you might actually hear it mentioned here on the show. Or used in a future video mailbag for YouTube channel members. I'm going to be doing another one of those soon. So I usually set up a separate thread for questions there, but sometimes I'll pull from your email questions. So anyway, follow me on Twitter, at Solomonster, at Solomonster on Twitter, at The Solomonster on Instagram. Subscribe on YouTube, because of course we have the weekly live streams on there. There's bonus content for channel members, more to come on there. You can become a channel member, or you can just subscribe and hit that like button on our streams and on our videos. I say our because I count all of you guys in this. Again, all of this is not possible without you. I am you and you are me. We are fused together as one, like Jeff Goldblum in The Fly. Hopefully we have a better ending than he did. But I'm going to be back with you next Sunday for episode 753 of the podcast, and I'm going to be live again on YouTube Wednesday night for Dynamite, and live on Friday. We're back in our usual spot since there's no Hog Show this week. So on that note, be well, stay safe. I hope those celebrating have a wonderful Easter. And I'm going to be back with you for 7:53 next Sunday. So until then, have a great week. Take care, guys.
The Solomonster sounds off.
Oscar V, what is your longest relationship and why did it end? My longest relationship is probably with WWE. And I've thought about ending it. I've thought about breaking it off. I've wanted to. And, you know, it tells me sometimes it's going to do better. You know, give me another chance. And then I do. And then invariably it lets me down again. It's a very abusive relationship. It really is.
The Solomonster sounds off. Each week, bursting with content. Podcasts, predictions, reviews, YouTube live streams, and more. Become a channel member for perks and follow the Solomonster on Twitter at Solomonster.
Solomonster.
Solomonster. Solomonster sounds off.